It's that time again for the Canvas TLDR podcast. I'm Matt Goodwin with product.
I'm Jen Mitchell with K-12 product marketing.
I'm Ryan Lufkin with higher ed product marketing.
We're here to share the latest and greatest in Canvas.
We're talking about the why in what we build, because Canvas can.
Welcome everybody to the April edition of the Canvas TLDR podcast. It's warming up, springtime.
April 2021, coming in with some allergy action. Pretty hard for me. I don't know about you guys.
Those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, we were all just sharing what we are allergic to, and Ryan and I are both highly allergic to cottonwood, so who knew?
As it turns out, we have a lot of those here in Utah.
And I'm just allergic to everything that makes pollen.
So just like the pollen in our air, this episode is slam-packed with goodness. What do we have scheduled, guys?
Well, Katrina Hess will be joining us from the product team to talk about the very exciting Microsoft Canvas partnership we've been working on for some time.
Yeah, and then VP of K-12 Learning, Trenton Goble, will join us for a new product launch, Mastery View Assessments.
And Jofie is going to join us from the product team. She's got a bunch of stuff to talk about with Canvas Studio and Chromebook support, annotations, all that good stuff.
Yeah, and then Bailey Haslam, who's one of our favorites from our events team, will be joining us to talk a little bit about CanvasCon Online 2021 and the call for proposals that is currently open. So looking forward to seeing everybody on that list.
Okay, let's get to it.
Boom.
We'd like to welcome Katrina Hess back to the program. Hi, Katrina. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We are stoked to have you here because I know we are talking Microsoft, which is on everybody's minds right now.
Yeah, we've been talking about that partnership for a little while now, but we're about to announce some cool stuff, right?
Awesome. Yeah, I'm stoked.
Yeah, so there should be a blog post live now, right, that outlines a little more information. Tell us a little bit about what's going on and what our listeners can expect.
Well, it's been really interesting working side by side with them. In my experience at Instructure, I haven't worked with a partner this closely before. And we often joke that we actually see each other like on the Microsoft team side more than I think our other colleagues at this point. And Jen and Ryan have also been on those calls. And yeah, we've been working side by side trying to make sure that this integration is just super awesome for our customers.
Yeah, it's exciting. The amount of energy from both companies that's gone into this is really exciting. I think for our listeners who are Microsoft shops, this is going to be really exciting. I think there's what, three different LTI integrations that are part of this.
That's coming up. Yeah. Yeah, there are things that we actually started way back in March, just when COVID happened. Yeah. And so there are things that are in place today, like the immersive reader. There's an ability to generate a Teams link from the RCE. And there's a couple of other things.
Yeah. I know there's a couple of things right now, but those are all kind of expanding, right, over the course of the next couple of months.
Exactly. And that's what we've been feverishly working on launching. So coming up in, I want to say July, August. Am I allowed to say those dates now?
Actually? I think you are, yeah. Okay.
Well, our podcast listeners get to know anyway, but around July, August.
You can say whatever dates you want because they know who to reach out to.
Exactly, right? The blog or the community post should be live with those dates in it. So.
Right on. Cool. So we have the OneDrive LTI is going to be launching. And the class teams LTI with the teams meeting LTI are also going to be launching. And the really cool thing about the class team and teams meeting ones is that it'll be hooked up to our data and rostering service. Carl's team has been working really hard on making sure that the roster and your course is represented in Teams. And so all of your enrollments will get synced nightly, and there's going to be that seamless integration between Canvas and Teams.
That's amazing. And I know that we're looking at August 1st for GA for a couple of the LTI integrations. And I know that's caused a little bit of consternation with, you know, being a little bit late. But we have set up a roadmap to help people kind of get ready for that, right?
Totally. Yeah. We, I mean, and that's one of the parts of this partnership, which I think has been, I'm just like super appreciative of, because they're so sensitive to knowing when fall start starts for our institutions in North America and around the world. And so they're setting us up with making sure that there's training, like a nice training mm-hmm. period that starts well before August 1st, so that institutions have time to socialize these LTIs and this integration throughout their school.
That's awesome.
And where do people go to find those resources?
Well, the first thing is that blog post. We're going to have a link there, not only for where to find the training resources, but also how to set up your institution for this integration. So essentially, there are three steps that institutions need to know about. There's the integration setup step. We have to make sure that your school has a Microsoft EDU license, which allows for a free tier level of the Teams and actually the Microsoft 365 offerings, which includes Teams and OneDrive and all of the other awesome Microsoft products. So there's the integration setup stage, and then there's the training period, and then there's installing the LTIs.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And we'll see if we can get links in the show notes here to just quick references.
For yep. Erin and I are working on the community post, so I'm pretty sure she's going to be able to hook us up with a link in the show notes as well. We'll be able to coordinated effort. And then Microsoft has their site, right, that actually mirrors ours and is there for their community to make sure we're getting that the word out broadly.
That's exactly it. Yeah. So in that Microsoft owned page, they're going to be bringing in all of their training resources and maintaining it and making sure all of the webinars and you know, channels to their support, all of that are going to be available on that page.
Awesome. And one of the things I'm excited about is this is kind of the culmination of a lot of work by both teams, but it's really kind of the first step in this partnership, right? I mean, the immersive reader was kind of the first big step, but this is a big deal, but it's really just the beginning of how we're going to work together in the future. And I think both companies are really responsive to what our users want to see and want to keep building on this first kind of delivery, right?
Exactly. Yeah, this is just the beginning. I mean, as we do in Canvas, we want to deliver the value as soon as possible so that our educators and students have a way to use Canvas and communicate and collaborate synchronously and asynchronously, especially during this time. But there's going to be iterative improvements throughout the year. And, you know, by fall start of 2022, I mean, there's going to be even more stuff going on. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, I'm super excited about how this is going to turn out long term. You know, Microsoft's been a partner of ours for years. And over the years, you know, they've been more ready than we have at certain points in terms of collaborating and working together and vice versa. We've been, you know, chomping at the bit for certain things to go out, and they've not been ready. But this is like the first time that I've seen us kind of lockstep in our focus and roadmap and what we want to go accomplish.
But you said something that just like, that's one of the things that I haven't experienced with other partners. Like I was saying, is we're not only having conversations about the roadmap towards this release of this integration, but they're asking us a lot of questions around how to improve their products for educators. So we're informing what their future roadmaps are for these tools in the future. And so that to me is like such a special part of the partnership.
That's awesome.
So again, this blog post will be ready by the time this airs, where people can dive in and get more information and what it means. And I think, you know, start making an action plan for summer so that we're ready to roll when going back to school, when these features are available in, you know, August.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us, Katrina. It's always awesome to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
And now we welcome the illustrious Trenton Goble to the program. Welcome, Trenton.
Welcome, Trenton.
Have you ever been intro'd like that before? The illustrious.
Illustrious.
That's why this is the best program.
So Trenton, your title, I think, is VP of K-12 Learning. You're the man behind the strategy. Is that correct?
Yeah, almost right. It's VP of K-12 Product Strategy.
Oh, and learning, because and that's learning. An important part. Sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, welcome. We're here to talk about a new product offering we have, the Mastery View Assessments, that was just announced April 13th, which is really incredibly exciting for the K-12 world. But before we dive into what Mastery View Assessments are, I want to talk a little bit about the why behind Mastery View Assessments. And we're looking to fall. And what both teachers and students are facing is we return to hopefully in-person learning. So can you tell us a little bit about kind of the thinking as we build up the strategy behind Mastery View Assessments?
Yeah, and I will say this. I think for the Mastery View Assessments, this has been a project a long time in the making. It's something that we've worked on for the last couple of years, actually. And as far as the why goes, it's interesting because I think COVID brought a lot of attention to assessment in the K-12 space around the fact that we didn't do end-of-level assessments last year in most places. And then also that kind of question around, what is the whole purpose of, say, the end-of-level assessment? Why are we doing that? And the reality is, I think we've always been a big proponent of the thought process that, if you're actually going to go out and go through the effort of assessing kids, that you should actually be using that, the information or the data from those assessments, to actually drive the right kind of interventions for students. We should be using that data to actually benefit kids in ways that change outcomes. And it's really, really hard to do that with some of the more traditional assessment environments, including even our interim assessments. So I think interim assessments are great. They provide a lot of good information for teachers. But the reality is we've always been missing this key component around the formative assessments piece, these kind of short form through course assessments that teachers can use in their classroom to get valid and reliable information. And the reason why this has been a multi-year project is because we've been working actually with Dr. Jonathan Templin, previously at the University of Canvas, now at the University of Iowa, on working on ways that we can actually use technology to take these very short form assessments and apply modern psychometrics to them so that we can get quality, valid and reliable information from very short form assessments. And so that's kind of a long-winded answer to say the reason why we're doing this is because we feel like there is a need in the market for teachers to have the types of assessments that they can use in their classroom that they can count on to provide them with information that they can use to then benefit kids.
What changed this year that kind of got us out in front of this?
So one of the things that I think was really exciting, a lot of people may know that we recently acquired Certica, which is an incredible acquisition for us in that it brought us the opportunity to get access to high quality assessments, high quality assessment items, but also to incredible folks who can help us build this content. And so that was always one of the real challenges we had in the past is how do we actually create and develop quality content that we can then utilize to actually be able to provide these types of resources to teachers. And so the acquisition of Certica really was one of those key things that when we made the acquisition, we knew that we wanted to capitalize on those resources to be able to bring high quality assessments, especially these Mastery View type assessments to teachers.
So what does Mastery View specifically do that, you mentioned it's always hard for teachers in the classroom, even with formative assessment in the way that exists today. Like what need does this fulfill where it makes that easier for the teachers?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've always been a big proponent of and a big believer in is that, teachers learn a lot when they create their own assessments and when they're utilizing, their own skill set to build formative assessments. The challenge that you often have is that how do we take the formative assessment and have that applicability across an entire district? So it's great that teachers are individually building and utilizing, building their own formative assessments in their classroom. But from a district perspective, when we have assessments like the Mastery View assessments, which I should highlight are just single standard formative assessments that are aligned to specific standards, really the priority standards. And so with that alignment to specific priority standards, and if think about this at a district level, what you're getting is the opportunity for teachers to give the same formative assessments. So every sixth grade teacher in the district, if they're utilizing these assessments, they're given the exact same assessment, which means that then teachers have the ability to look and compare how their students are doing compared to other teachers in their building. At a district level, you have the ability to kind of look across your entire district and take the pulse and, you know, to be able to see, are there areas, especially in a post-COVID environment, where our kids are really lacking right now, where we need to kind of double down and really tie in those resources to be able to support kids as we're getting them back into the classroom.
I think the important thing that you've mentioned are these are low stake formative assessments to be used in the classroom. And so for teachers coming back where they may not know where their students are, there's going to be a wide gap, right, of some students that had caught up or maybe thrived during remote learning and other students that are going to need a lot of additional supports to get them back up to grade level. Is the ability to just choose from a collection of assessments that you know are high quality, they're aligned to the right standards, so we know we're testing the right things and we're doing it reliably. That's just a game changer, I think, on how they would use those in the classroom.
Yeah, and I think that really is the critical element. They're intended to be low stakes, and they are intended to be driven by teachers. Now, one of the nice things is that districts still have the option through, say, Mastery Connect, if they want to be able to take those assessments and apply them to their district's, you know, pacing guide or scope and sequence, you can do that, you know, through our curriculum mapping features to be able to say, here, teachers, here are all of these assessments, and here's the context or at least the order in which it makes sense as we're coming back. But I also think one of my big fears in a post-COVID world is that we're gonna be so worried about where kids are at that we're going to miss out on really focusing on the things that matter the most, which are we need to make sure kids get back to school and feel engaged again and that they feel connected. And that transition, and I know a lot of schools have already made it, but that transition from working remotely at home to getting back in the classroom is not going to be an easy one for all students. You know, the 6-hour day, it might be something they get really excited about initially, but getting back into the flow of things is going to be a challenge. And the one thing that I fear is that because as adults we're so worried, we're going to jump into like this hardcore assessment piece where we're just going to over assess kids as opposed to let's get them back in school. Let's give teachers assessments that they can use in context, in the context mm-hmm. of the work that they're already doing. So it doesn't feel like, you know, hey, you missed your end of level test last year. You know, let's get fired up and really test the crud out of these kids to begin as we get going. I just think that would be such a horrible thing to do to kids coming back and really missing out on an opportunity for us to re-engage our students and, you know, create an environment where kids are feeling safe and valued and take it slow, but also really, really use formative assessment as a way to identify where kids' needs are. Because I think your point is a good one, Jen. Some of these kids will have thrived during COVID, you know, that maybe have had parents that have invested way more time because they're at home together and done a lot to help their kids thrive. And there will be kids who are coming back and they're going to need a lot of extra help. So I think these types of assessments, good assessments that with high quality items were built by experts in the field, assessments that teachers can really rely on, that data is going to be really important.
So what grades and subjects are they available for?
So it's math and language arts, and it's 3-8. And one thing that's going to be really important to understand is that they'll be different. In math, they're very much single standard. You know, it'll be about 15 standards per grade level, multiple assessments per standard, where language arts, most teachers will understand this, the way that standards are structured with language arts, they are much more tied together. And so they'll be built around passages and questions. So it will be, there'll be fewer assessments, but multi-standard in nature. And then I believe, Jen, correct me if I'm wrong, we also have some assessments for later grades.
Yeah, we also have them for Algebra 1 and English 1 and 2 for our high school students.
And the thing I'm excited about is this is year one. You know, as we move in, you know, in years to come, we'll obviously have the opportunity to evaluate, you know, what's working for folks and opportunities to, you know, not only improve the assessments moving forward, but also look at ways that we can expand our reach into grade levels and possibly additional subject areas.
Very nice. So if you are interested in learning more about Mastery Views, reach out to your CSM. It is available through Mastery Connect, our assessment management system. So if you're a current user, we can get you right on board. If not, we can figure out how to help you through all your assessment needs through next year.
And we can probably have producer Aaron add something in the show notes, a link to the show notes for more information.
Thanks for joining us, the illustrious Trenton Goble, everybody.
It's always good to see you.
It's good. Thanks for having me on. I'll just say that. I love being here.
All right. I'm excited to welcome to the show today, Jofi Goreski. You've actually heard her on the show before, talking about some of our other products like Catalog and things like that. But today she's going to talk about Canvas Studio. Welcome.
Hi, everybody. Welcome, Jofi. Thanks for joining us. So we have some exciting things coming out in Studio, and video is so important now, more important than ever before. So it's really exciting to get these enhancements to Studio. So can you tell us a little bit about what we've seen in the last couple weeks to updates to Studio?
Yes, sure. I'm happy to do that. So we have just released two new features in Studio. One of them is for those customers who use Studio on Chromebooks. So previously, if you used the Chromebook for Studio, you didn't get a nice screen recording capability. There were some technical limitations behind this restriction, and we just managed to solve it. So from now on, even Chromebook users can record their screen, or they can still use their webcam recording capability and then get a recording and upload it into Studio directly.
Awesome. That's big for your K-12 audience, Jen.
Yeah, I've heard from them, and they're super excited about that. All those tiny humans using Chromebooks out there.
Yeah, we are happy to support them as well, and we felt really bad like not having a solution for them as well.
Yeah. And then there's another feature that is for, you know, a little more focused on everybody. Tell us about that one.
So, okay, we are happy to announce that we just released annotations, a new capability in Studio, which enables our instructors or, you know, instructional designers, any of our media owners to select a certain timestamp within their media and add the note card to that specific timestamp. Mm-hmm. And whoever views that media will be able to watch the video, and at that certain timestamp, the media will pause and you will see whatever has been added as a note card, whether it's some sort of text, it can be a link as well, any kind of description. So it also allows our instructors to add some additional content to their media.
Awesome. Awesome. So is that something that instructors could turn on and off based on?
So it's a mandatory thing, you know, like if you are a media owner, you can decide whether you want to add an annotation to a certain timestamp or not. And we are also working on some enhancements for this as well. And it will be also integrated with quizzes, and whoever creates a video quiz will be able to select whether they want to see the annotation added to the media or not, but that is work in progress. So that's going to come a little bit later down on the road, but annotations is already out and available in Studio.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, where can people go to learn more about this or see how it works?
We already have some release notes in the community. I encourage everybody to go there and check it out. We will also have some specific guides in the community, you know, describing how the feature works, or just simply open Studio, click the three-dot menu on any of your media cards, select annotate video, select the certain timestamp of your video where you would like to add some additional content for your viewers and create a nice note card for them.
And we'll have producer Aaron add those in the show links to the in the show notes as well, so you can find those easily. So Jen and I know what the roadmap looks like well into the future for Studio, but this is kind of the first of a lot of exciting updates happening to Studio over the next year, right?
Oh, yes. So this year we are going to work on a nice, like high number of new capabilities in Studio. And one of them, which is coming in this quarter, is allowing our admins to see some analytics, some data on how instructors and students utilize Studio. So we would like to make sure that our admins understand like to what extent Studio is used across their instance, like which videos, you know, get the most attention, how much storage they have used so far, things like that. So that is coming in a few months.
That is very exciting. I know, right in time for back to school here in North America, but it'll be really exciting for them to be able to get a view on how interactive this is and how people are consuming this information. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Zofie, we'll have you back on the show, I think, many more times this year, but we appreciate you joining us today.
I'm happy to come anytime.
We know it's everybody's favorite time. We make it pretty painless, and our listeners love the info. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
We'll talk to you again soon.
We want to welcome to the podcast Bailey Haslam. She's one of the awesome, brilliant minds behind all of our events. And we're here to talk about CanvasCon Online 2021.
CanvasCon Online 2021.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here to chat about it. We love this event. We're excited. Yeah,
it's going to be exciting. So we have announced a date, right?
Yeah, October 7th.
Excellent. And then tell us a little bit about the, you know, how is this different than last year's CanvasCon Online? What do they have to look forward to?
Well, we have a lot to look forward to. We were bummed that we couldn't do it in person again this year, but in abundance of caution, of course, we wanted to bring as much InstructureCon to everyone as possible that we could do virtually. So we're going to mix up the format a little bit. We're going to have lots of really awesome keynotes. Again, we're going to offer some really great breakout sessions provided by our awesome customers and partners. And then we'll have some really killer internal sessions as well. And we're going to up the ante on those a little bit. So we offered about 50 last year. We'll have several more this year to choose from. Lots of really cool tracks. We're going to try to organize it in a way that will be easier for the viewer to really be able to take it all in.
Awesome.
You mentioned, a lot of great sessions run by our customers. That's one of the reasons you're on the podcast today, right?
Call for yes.
Proposals is open. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, our call is open. It opened last week, and it'll close on May 14th. So we have still a little bit of time to get them in, and we want to hear from you guys. We always have such, like, seriously amazing submissions. Oh, yeah. It makes our job, Ryan knows, Matt, you know too, you're on the committee. I mean, impossibly difficult to select. So it's open until the 14th, and we'll keep letting everyone know via our social channels, like, hey, it's open, and we'll let you guys know when it closes as well, to get it in, because we really want to hear from you guys. And then we'll let everyone know the select who made it or who's picked, I guess, by May 31st. We're really hoping to like nail the agenda down.
We are turning those fast.
Yeah.
Matt and Jen and I are all on the selection committee, so you can send gifts or bribes to...
Cash is accepted.
I know that, there's always the fear of... maybe what I've got to say, nobody will want to hear that. That's not the case. If you have any idea of something that you think would be useful for other educators, please submit that as a proposal.
Oh, yeah. So many amazing lessons learned over the last year and COVID and different approaches with Canvas. I mean, this really is this conference is powered by these sessions and you know, Canvas customers talking to other Canvas customers more than us talking at you all. So we definitely want to hear those different stories and you know, the different exciting things people are doing.
Yeah, one thing we realize when looking at all of the submissions is there is no wrong way to use the platform. Everybody is using it in a different way. Yep. And it's helpful for even us who work at Instructure to see how everyone is using it.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the, you know, we talked about this a little bit about this last year. I think prior to last year, it was easier for higher ed folks to travel a little bit. It was, you know, there was some of our content kind of skewed that way. And last year, because it was online, we had such a bigger representation from the K-12 community. So we had a lot more K-12 sessions. And so you'll see, you know, a nice balance between higher ed content, K-12 content, whatever you're looking for, right? We've kind of spread that pretty evenly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so call for proposal is open. Get that out there. You have until May 14th. We want to hear it.
Yeah, I'll have Aaron put a link in the show notes, so make that easy. Yeah, we want to hear your story, so get out there.
Well, you know, stay tuned on the community site. We will be posting those keynotes at some point in the not-too-distant future. Who's going to be gracing us with their presence and their messages?
Yeah, we're close to having everything secured, and it's going to be a really awesome lineup. So I can't tell you guys quite yet who we're going to have and what it's going to be, but it's really going to be awesome. So I can promise you that.
One way or the other, awesomeness will ensue.
Well, thanks for joining us, Bailey. I hope everybody's looking forward to CanvasCon Online. I know I am. We learned a lot from doing it online last year. I'm sure we'll mix it up a little bit this year to make it even better.
Yep, absolutely. Happy to be here. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Bailey. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was an exciting episode of the TLDR podcast.
Yes, it was. I would agree.
Your excitement is tangible. Feel it. I can feel it.
No, it was a good episode. And next time we talk to folks, it'll be a little bit warmer. We will have May the 4th and Cinco de Mayo'd, hopefully.
May the 4th. We need to lobby for that to be an official holiday.
I think it is in Matt's house, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah. Well, any holiday where you can say there's food involved is an official holiday.
We need the lightsaber noises. I don't know if we have special effects.
Well, thanks for joining us, and
see you everybody next time.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Canvas TLDR podcast. If you'd like to take a look at what's happening in our next release, please visit releases.instructure.com, and we'll see you next month. Bye-bye.